Good afternoon. My name is Debbie, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Center for American Progress press call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question during this time, simply press star and the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Ms. Angela Kelly. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, operator, and welcome everyone to today's press call where the Center for American Progress has released a paper called Staying Put But Still in the Shadows, which can be found at americanprogress.org. And this paper is the first in a series that the Center for American Progress is going to be releasing over the coming months. It's a series that we're calling Documenting the Undocumented, and where we're going to be taking a closer look at the daily lives, struggles, and strategies that undocumented immigrants use to withstand the assault of harsh anti-immigrant laws that we see being passed at the state level. So today is the first of these series, and this report is very much based on a study that's been done that I believe is the first of its kind, and it draws from research that was done by the University of California at San Diego, and I'll describe that program in just a minute. And this is research that was done that actually studied by talking to unauthorized immigrants in Oklahoma in the wake of anti-immigrant ordinances that were being passed in that state in 2007 and in 2009. It also includes research that's been more recently done looking at the patterns of unauthorized immigrants in the wake of the Georgia and Alabama anti-immigrant laws that were passed just last year. This is obviously a topic that's relevant to today's debate, as we see presidential candidates, the Republicans, talking a lot about immigration policy and making declarations that if we just crack down tough enough on undocumented immigrants, that they will self-deport. The study finds that that is a myth and that, in fact, immigrants are not self-deporting. And you'll hear from the speakers with a lot of clarity and specificity what exactly undocumented immigrants are doing. This paper is also relevant because of the number of state laws that have passed recently, as I mentioned, in Georgia and Alabama, Arizona, Oklahoma, and there are a number of other similar laws in the queue in states like Mississippi or Virginia that are waiting, frankly, to see what the outcome is of the laws that have passed, and as the Supreme Court is going to be taking up the constitutionality of the Arizona law, SB 1070, that passed in April of 2010. Again, all of us are with bated breath to see what the Supreme Court will do. But at the heart of these laws and the question that the Supreme Court is going to be answering is, do the laws work? What happens when these laws pass? Are they, in fact, effective in making life so miserable for the undocumented that they leave their state? So today, to answer those questions, we're very lucky to have three terrific speakers, and I'll introduce them briefly now, and they'll each be making short presentations. The first is Leah Muse Orlinoff, and Leah is a PhD candidate in sociology at the University of California at San Diego. She's with the Center for Comparative Immigration Studies, and she actually was a field research coordinator for the Mexican Migration Field Research Project. After Leah speaks, Lourdes Villanueva, who is a director of farm worker advocacy at the Redland Christian Migrant Association in Florida, will be giving her firsthand account of what she's been seeing in Florida in the aftermath of the Georgia and Alabama laws passing. And then last but not least, we'll be hearing from Lieutenant Paco Balderrama with the Oklahoma City Police Department, who again will be giving his firsthand account of what he saw happen in the community in Oklahoma in the aftermath of that state's anti-immigrant laws. Our first speaker, though, is Leah, who wrote this terrific paper for us. So, Leah, can you just tell us a little bit about the highlights of your paper?
Absolutely, and thank you all so much for participating in this call today. This is an issue that has been getting a lot of media attention lately, the whole concept of self-deportation as the result of local and state policies designed to make life so uncomfortable and so miserable for undocumented communities that they just take themselves straight back to wherever it is they came from. And this paper, which is, which is based on research that I was involved in a couple of years ago in Oklahoma City and in Mexico, in the town of Tlacuitapa in Jalisco, shows that that's very much not the case, that there is, in fact, very little evidence to show, and really no evidence, to show that people go back to Mexico when states and localities pass very tough anti-immigrant policies, And in fact, what they do is, if in the most extreme cases, I guess you could say, is that they just switch jurisdictions. They move to a different county, they move to a different town, they move to a different state, but almost never do they go back to the country that they came from. So I want to give just a very, very quick overview of kind of the context of this paper. It comes as a part of an ongoing research project on Mexican migration and settlement patterns from different migrant communities in Mexico and their communities of settlement in the United States. And what this allows us to do is to look at the experiences of migrants who have been in the United States over a longer amount of time, as well as migrants who are more recently arrived. And we find that in the case of the town that really is highlighted in this migrant, in this paper, it's a town with many, many generations of immigration history. It's an ongoing community of out-migration in Mexico. And Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, is one of the main destinations for in the United States for migrants. And so this is a really terrific opportunity to do some great on-the-ground research on the effects of these local and state policies in 2010, because Oklahoma passed two very strong restrictionists, by which I mean anti-immigrant ordinances and policies, in 2007 and 2009. And these were designed to, if not explicitly, then very much implicitly, to create such a difficult quality of life and to really make settlement very, very difficult, if not impossible, for undocumented migrants in the in Oklahoma and across the state. So when we went to Oklahoma City in early 2010, this was an issue that we were very much interested in. What are the effects of these policies, these state policies, on the quality of life of this undocumented community? And to what extent were we able to identify migrant families who were so fed up with the situation that they were ready to throw in the towel and go back to Mexico? And what we found is that there were no families that were so fed up that they were willing to go back to Mexico. What we found were numerous cases of families and individuals who felt targeted, who felt scared, who felt vulnerable, and who felt like they were being very much singled out by local, by state politicians, scapegoated, but who were committed to remaining in Oklahoma. They had jobs, they had families, they had community ties, and there was no reason for them to go back to a town where there was no work to begin with. So the overall strategy of migrants in Oklahoma City that we interviewed was to sort of hunker down and say, we're going to do everything we can to stay out of the spotlight. We're going to continue to go to work. We're going to continue to send our kids to school. We're going to continue to be part of this community, but we're going to do everything we can to stay out of the law enforcement's eye. And one of the things that we find in this research is that the biggest detriment by far to the community of these local and state policies is that it creates tremendous distrust and fear among undocumented communities vis-a-vis law enforcement. And that's something that Lieutenant Valderrama is going to be able to speak to in a little bit. The migrants that we spoke to reported being much, just absolutely terrified of being pulled over while driving, driving while brown, for example. But for the most part, that was the thing that they were scared of. They weren't exactly, they weren't losing their jobs because of the requirements that employers e-verify, because the sort of obstacles to using e-verify among employers are so tremendous that a lot of, and the enforcement mechanisms are so inconsequential that nobody had lost their job because of that. What I really want to highlight as far as the findings of this paper, though, is this nonsensical rationale of self-deportation. And I say nonsensical because if you think about what the basic premise of this idea is that if we make life so difficult for people, they'll leave. And that's simply not the case. That is absolutely not backed up by any empirical evidence. And in fact, there's no real logic to the idea in the first place, because we're talking about 11 million people who have family members here in the United States. 45% of undocumented people in the United States are living with at home with adults and children. That's far greater a percentage than legal migrants or even native, especially native-born Americans. These are family units that we're talking about. They're not isolated individuals. So to come up with this idea that if we just make life so incredibly difficult, everybody will leave is simply not the case. Among other reasons why there's no reason to think that migrants would go back is the fact that it is so immensely expensive and dangerous to come back into the United States. And again, I'll point to the fact that people left their home countries, in this case Mexico, to begin with because there was no job, there was no work, there was no way to earn a living. And even in communities where there is some small wage work, it's almost never enough to sustain a family. With the result that migrants come to the United States and they earn a good living, and eventually when they want to be reunited with their families, instead of engaging in the circular migration that characterized Mexican migration for so many years, they've brought their families to the United States. So again, the families are based here in the United States. There's no reason to go back to Mexico because there's no jobs, and then to be able to come back into the United States is prohibitively expensive and dangerous. And then finally, this is a community that has tremendous hope for the future. This is a community of undocumented migrants that sees an economic recovery as being good for everybody who's in the United States right now, regardless of their immigration status. It's a community that is dedicated to working hard, to supporting their families, to being involved in and invested in their communities. And the idea of returning to a place that they left so long ago that is no longer home is just simply not on the table in most cases. So that's the gist of the report. There's a lot of other really great information in there, of course, about that kind of contextualizes the migration from this community, that talks a lot more about the dangers and the costs of crossing the border. But the main point is that people are staying put, and that's creating very, very complicated situations for law enforcement who are trying to, in some cases, bridge that gap of distrust that has been engendered by these hateful and very harsh policies. And there's a tremendous need for immigration reform at the federal level to reduce the patchwork effect of these local policies. And I think that's the bulk of what I wanted to say. So at this point, I will turn it over to Angie, who will introduce the next speaker.
Thank you, Leah. That was perfect. And a good introduction to our next speaker, Lieutenant Paco Valderrama, who, as I mentioned earlier, is with the Oklahoma City Police Department and really knows firsthand what the impact of these laws can be on a community. So, Lieutenant, can you share with us some of your observations?
Sure. Good afternoon, and thank you very much for including me in this press call and also the Oklahoma City Police Department. I want to just give the caveat before I begin that, you know, as being a member of the police department, we're a neutral party. We don't create laws. We're tasked with enforcing them. Therefore, I really don't have an opinion either way, a professional opinion on the matter. All I can do is detail what we experienced here in Oklahoma City and are still experiencing. In early 2006, I was working in the public information office as a sergeant, and my duties were to obviously deal with the media as far as inquiries, police-related inquiries. During that time, that particular time in our legislation here in the state of Oklahoma, they were considering passing House Bill 1804, which the law affected illegal immigrants. It forced certain employers to report them in case they were working for them or attempting to work for them. It made it a crime for people to facilitate, hide, give rides to people who they knew were undocumented in this country. And also it forced police departments and law enforcement agencies to report incidents that involved people who we believe to be illegally here in this country. In addition to that, if somebody was arrested that we received the information that they were here illegally, we were also to report them to immigration. Like I just said before, our job is to enforce the law. We're not legislators. We don't implement these laws, but we are tasked with enforcing whatever laws exist in the books. At the same time, it was very important for the police department to keep an open and a positive avenue of communication with our Hispanic community here in Oklahoma City. We have kept that prior to House Bill 1804, and we worked very hard to maintain that open avenue of communication, and we wanted to keep that. From our experience, we knew that if the Hispanic community was all of a sudden afraid of the police department and didn't want to call us, didn't want to call 911, did not want to report crimes, any crimes, that they would suffer, and ultimately all of Oklahoma City would suffer. We believe this because if you have a certain community that does not report crimes, well, then criminals are going to go in and attack and exploit that community. In fact, we have several incidents where African-American gangs were going to Hispanic communities and they were robbing people at gunpoint in apartment complexes late at night in the parking lots. They knew that Hispanics weren't going to call the police. They knew that Hispanics got paid in cash. They knew that Hispanics got paid on Fridays. So all of a sudden, we started getting a high number of these incidents where people were sometimes shot, sometimes battered, because they were attacked and robbed by gang members. They also knew that they were not going to call the police. They were going to call 911. Therefore, what did they have to fear? During that time, we began a pretty aggressive campaign through the Public Information Office to continue having the Hispanic community's trust. Luckily, I was in the office, and I'm fluent in Spanish. Therefore, I went on Spanish radio, Spanish TV, Spanish newspapers, and just really detailed the fact that we were going to continue to protect and serve everybody in Oklahoma City, including the Hispanic community. We wanted whether they were citizens or not, if they were here in Oklahoma City and they were the victims of a crime, we wanted them to call. We also made it a point to, although we were following House Bill 1804 completely because we're mandated to do so, we also initiated policies within our department that, in certain instances, we were not to ask individuals for their papers or whether they were here illegally. Quite frankly, if I'm responding to a burglary call, what does it matter if the person has papers or not? It has nothing to do with the fact that they were burglarized and they need the police and they need it documented. Another big fear was that, women were going to be victimized. Incidents like child abuse, rape, child molestation, where the families didn't feel like they had an avenue to report that. We did not want that to happen. So, like I said before, we began our aggressive campaign. I got out there. I was, spearheaded the operation by being on several newspapers, several television shows, and just got the message out that we were still here to protect and serve. And I think it worked. I think that for the most part, sure, some people still didn't call us. Some people were still scared. Some people were still skeptical and chose not to call the police when they needed help. But I think a lot of them continued to call us, and they felt safe because they knew that we were not there to, we were not immigration. We were not there to arrest everybody. We were there to do our jobs, to protect them, to document incidents, to solve crimes, to arrest the guilty. So we continue to do that. Like I said, our experience was somewhat a positive one, although who knows? We'll never have the numbers of how many people didn't call. We'll never have those net numbers of how many victims we have there that were victims of rape who never reported, and thus the suspect was never apprehended. We also believe that if it doesn't benefit anybody in the community for Hispanics not to call the police, some people may have the attitude of, well, it doesn't matter. They shouldn't be here anyway, or they don't belong here. But the fact of the matter is that crime is going to spread to everybody's community. If criminals see an opportunity to make money and to gain a position of advantage, they're going to continue on. And sooner or later, the entire city of Oklahoma City would have been affected by that. So, besides that, besides the policies that we enacted, that is, and besides the media campaign, that is pretty much all that we did. Like I said, we were very happy with the results because we believe that we kept that open avenue of communication. As far as people leaving or people staying, I don't have any solid numbers to be able to comment at all. All I can tell you is that when I do hit the streets as a patrol lieutenant, we have various overtime programs where we focus extra efforts, extra police presence in certain parts of town. I probably see more Hispanics here in Oklahoma City than I've ever seen. And certainly now in 2012, as compared to 2007 when this law came in, in my opinion, from what I've seen, I believe that the Hispanic population is actually higher here in Oklahoma City than it was back then. And I'm sure when the next census comes around,
Thank you so much, Lieutenant. Our final speaker is Lourdes Villanueva. Lourdes is the Director of Farm Worker Advocacy with the Redland Christian Migration Association in Florida and has been dealing directly with folks in the aftermath of the Georgia and Alabama laws. Lourdes, your experiences.
Thank you. First of all, Redlands Christian Migrant Association is the largest provider of child care and education services in 21 counties, and we serve the populations in the rural and poor communities. Therefore, we work with these very people when they very first come into the different communities to do farm work. Florida's industry, the number two industry, is agriculture. So we do get a lot of migrant farm workers, and we know that they normally, traditionally, have traveled back and forth following the crops to work. Because I know that many times undocumented people are labeled as criminals, and they are just very hardworking people. I think it's the first thing I would like, you know, pretty much everybody to know. They are people. They are families. And that is something that I know that the previous speakers spoke about. For the most part, they are mixed status families, meaning that there are several citizens and undocumented within the same family, which it's also why it is not as easy that they're just going to pick up and leave. In the aftermath of the recent states passing their own anti-immigrant laws, we did have a new wave of families that had come to Florida for the very first time, again, under very difficult situations because many had not ever done farm work. Others had done farm work many years ago, therefore coming in just guessing of where and how to find work was very difficult. Then, of course, they don't want to stay in any one place longer. They just don't want people to know that they are there. Again, this has made it an issue because they feel they have to continuously move, so they're not detected by the systems, whatever system it may be. Many times, and we have been around, we as an organization, for 46 years, and we trust that we have a good relationship with the community, but it even takes us a while to get the trust of the families that we are here to serve the children and support the families in their endeavors. And it is just, I mean, I can only echo the previous speaker's concerns because, yes, we also do see where they do not report any crimes. In some situations that we feel that they have to be reported, we will invite the family to go to one of our locations, and we would do the call from there so that the police departments or whoever needs to come and talk to them can come to that location and not go to their homes because they just feel that, well, now everybody's going to know where they live, and they're, you know, again, ICE is just going to go and raid the whole complex, wherever it is that they are. It is just really a very, very stressful situation for families and for children. This is something that the families live with day in and day out. We see these daily when families come and they basically hand over their children and they will tell you, hopefully they will be here to pick them up this afternoon. Again, because they don't know if they're going to be stopped on their way to or from work and will not be back to pick up their children. We also do a lot of family education, and they have opted to do this year that only one parent would attend. They will take turns. They would alternate because families do not want to be traveling together even to go to church because they are afraid that if they are stopped for a broken light, that everyone will be deported. Unfortunately, that is not a very hard-fetched idea. I mean, those are situations that have happened. And, of course, you know, families hear about them, and the fear is just tremendous. of course, children do not really understand what is going on. So automatically, they are only learning to fear the police departments of any kind, any law enforcement officer for them. So as part of our community resource for children and education, we have always invited the different departments to come and visit so they can. And this is something that it has become very difficult because children will start crying. So just all in all, I think that we are just doing a tremendous disservice to the families. I mean, we're just basically, and again, this is just coming from a mother, a social worker, a citizen. We are just basically tearing the families apart. Last year, Florida had, you know, their own idea of an anti-immigrant law. Thank God it didn't pass. I am not naive to think that it was because of, you know, the great family values that we have, which we do. But it is a very economic mechanism here. For, you know, the like I said, agriculture is number two. Tourism is number one. And it is not a bright idea for Florida to have that, even though there continues to be a kickball. You know, every so often you will hear it, just like you do with any other state, especially now with elections. It's the one time that you will hear about it. Basically, this whole thing just seems to be a very anti-family, and we just really need to shed the light on what the issues really are. The families are, for the most part, mixed status families, and it is not as easy to just say, you just do this or do that, and they will disappear, because that is just really unrealistic. It may be a good line for a minute or two, but then reality is these are people, and they are family.
Thank you, Lourdes. That's perfect. I think that concludes the presentations. I appreciate the speakers' presentations. And Debbie, if you could just give instructions on how people can ask a question, that would be terrific.
Sure. As a reminder to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile our Q&A roster. Our first question comes from the line of Dustin Bowles with Cronkite News.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just had a quick question about the research done. All of it takes place in Oklahoma between 2009 and 2010. Based on your findings, how confident are you that your results can be extrapolated to other states, such as Arizona, which is a border state, when Oklahoma is obviously not a border state? Are you confident that the results will stay consistent, or is there some speculation that it might be different? Thank you.
Thanks. Leah, your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. Excuse me. Dustin, thank you for the question. That's a very good question. I would like to just sort of explain that the research in the paper was focused on Oklahoma City, but this is part of a much larger project that encompasses communities in lots of different parts of the United States. So, for example, we have a community of research that is in San Diego County, which is right on the border, of course, and we have a community of migrants that we work with that is in the Los Angeles area. And so while the paper itself focused on this one particular Oklahoma-based community, in my experience doing research on immigration over the last half decade, these results are very, very extrapolated. They can be extrapolated to other communities. In states like Arizona, which have some of the most severe and the most restrictionist policies, what we see is still not this massive return to Mexico, and that's data that's been backed up by the Mexican census as well. What we see is that people are moving into the cash economy when workplace enforcement is ratcheted up. People figure out ways to earn a living in the sort of shadows of the economy, in the informal economy. But for the most part, again, when people have families that live in the United States, when they have children that are enrolled in American schools, when they have connections to people in this country, and there are no jobs and few opportunities for economic advancement in the communities of origin, there's no economic or emotional sense in returning to Mexico. And I'd like to just point out one quick thing that Lourdes referred to, which is this issue of mixed-status families. There are 9 million people who live in families with at least one undocumented parent and one U.S. citizen child. So when we talk about self-deportation, we have to understand that these are decisions that are, again, not being made in isolation. These are decisions that are being made by parents with kids who are part of this nation, who are part of the American community, and who would have a much, much, much harder time of it in a country in which they are actually not a citizen. So for the parents who are not citizens, again, it makes virtually no economic sense and no emotional sense to return to their communities of origin. Instead, they'll switch states, they'll switch jurisdictions, they'll hunker down and stay out of the shadows, but by no means are they going back to Mexico.
Thank you.
Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. At this time, there are no further questions.
All right. If there are no further questions, then I'd like to just thank everybody for their participation. And please feel free to give us a call. You can call my colleague Christina at 202-481-8181 if you have any follow-up that you'd like to do or get in touch with any of the speakers. Thanks very much. And if the speakers could stay on, that would be great.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect. Presenters.